This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
In peace, may you leave this shore. In love, may you find the next.
See the passage on your travels. Until our final journey to the ground.
May we meet again.
I'm waking up.
May we meet again.
To ash and dust, I wipe my brow and I sweat my wraps. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, and checking out on the prison bars. This is it, the apocalypse. I feel it in my bones, enough to make my systems roll. Welcome to the new age, to the new age. Welcome to the new age. Oh, radioactive, radioactive.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kyle, Luke, Kathleen, and Jimmy. We are back for the final time with our coverage of The 100. We got the whole 100 squad here talking series finale today. Tears in the chat, guys.
Tears in the chat, for sure. RT if you cry.
That was a lot. The Last War... It lived up to the hype, in my opinion.
Well, the episode's called The Last War.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Grow up.
It was awesome. We got some crazy, unexpected deaths. We got some insane conclusions that we did not think we were going to end up getting. But all in all, I thought it was one of the best episodes of the season.
They really cranked the sci-fi up to 100, didn't they? This fucking season. I mean... Think about it. Prior to this season, everything was more like, okay, we're in the future. Moving to different planets, space travel, like that seems futuristic. This was like fucking sci-fi. This is magic and heaven and beams of light. So
yeah, it's a little weird when you're thinking about it in from where we came from in the first five, maybe six seasons. But when you're looking at it through the lens of this last season and we already had to accept that sci-fi was going to be insane for season seven... That's when I am allowing myself to love this episode.
Yeah, I mean, Kathleen said it best. I said it last episode. I think they wrote themselves into the corner with the supernatural stuff, and not that I agree with any of the transcendent stuff. I think that they chose the best way to end it, and I was happy with it.
So I think what they did well is once Bill was introduced and he started talking about cult transcendence, we knew that this sci-fi content was a possibility, but they did a good job of the entire season leaving us guessing whether or not that was going to be the reality, whether that was the actual end game. So since episode one, I think we all understood that if they were going the transcendence route, this was going to turn super sci-fi real quick. It really started to get turned on once we saw the glowy Groots in the Etheria
glowy episode. Glowy Groots, yeah.
And it kind of confirmed it. But yeah, super sci-fi, but I
see, the issue with that is we, not just us, but like the whole fandom has been debating if that was a simulation or not and if that was real. So that's why we didn't take it at face value and assume that we were going this deep into sci-fi. Because we always thought that there was a chance that that wasn't real and Bellamy was just seeing things. I don't want to say we weren't ready for that ending, because we were, and we saw the glowy lights in the past, but I didn't think it was real until I was seeing it happen.
Why don't you take us to the poll?
Okay.
Yeah, let's go to the poll.
Yeah, let's. Well, like always, every single week we ask you guys what you thought of the episode, and this was the series finale. So our last poll, we had loved it, great ending, 52%, it was okay, 23%, and not what I wanted, 25%.
This fandom is always so split. There was no way they were ever going to get a finale out there that made everyone happy. But I and Luke can contest this. I've been walking around like a ghost all day. I'm fucking upset. I've watched it a million times. I loved the episode. Loved it to death. I am so happy that they just ended on a good note. That's all I really wanted for them, was to be happy, and they're going to be, so that's fine. I always get so depressed at the end of my show, so I'm just like so fucking sad, but hyped to just get into the episode.
I loved it. How about
that
you?
I voted the same way. I loved it.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, I didn't vote, but I would have voted that I loved it. Cool. And there's like, you know, there's little things that, I mean, we like to nitpick over things with the guns going through the anomaly and if this is realistic or not. At the end, when the episode ended, I was like, wow, that was really good.
I just thought it was humorous because like all those episodes ago, we were nitpicking the guns through the portals, and literally this episode, an entire army fully decked out with guns came through the portal like shields and stuff. And we spent 10 minutes talking about this freaking guns.
They wasted time writing that dialogue then.
That's because we care.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. It is because we care.
I loved it too. I really do think that it was the best case scenario based on how they wrote the entire season.
Bunch of lovers in here.
Yeah, let's get into it because we'll be able to actually talk through the scenes and say what we liked and may not have liked throughout the episode.
All right, so our first opening scene is directly after last episode. We're seeing Amori just arriving on Sanctum on the gurney being pushed by Jackson and Murphy.
Really intense. Good directing by Jason, honestly. Great. I loved so many shots in this episode.
We always praise Richard Harmon as being the best, and he was the best in this scene. He just, how he shows emotion when it's connected to Amori's character is always hands down like scene stealer.
And that got you going right away with the tears, man, with Richard freaking.
Oh my God. He is phenomenal. Come
on. Yep.
So good.
Yep.
I'm so glad that all of his scenes were really Amori-based because he's been the hero all season, and I think that him and Amori really are the heart, and just let them have it. I'm glad that at the end it was Murphy, Clark, and Ravens. I'm like, these are the three heroes without Octavia. Mm-hmm. Those are our four main characters now. I loved it. I loved every Murphy scene.
We talked about it last episode, how we did recently interview Sachin Sahil, who plays Dr. Jackson, and one of the things that we've been holding on to is he said that his favorite personal episode for Dr. Jackson, the character, was coming up, and this was like three or four episodes ago, and we assumed it was last episode, but after this one, it was definitely the finale. Jackson was great.
I think we assumed it was the last three every single time, because Jackson had some great stuff every single time for the last three episodes, but yeah, I mean, that whole sequence with Jackson, Murphy, Raven, and Amori was so good. You know,
Miller also coming in and playing
into
part
Miller
later.
Coming in.
Fantastic.
Yep, so good.
Get that Raven used that defibrillator on herself line, which I love. That was such an insane storyline for Raven that she had to go in that tank and defibrillate herself,
But it's also really funny, too, because sometimes you forget that Jackson and some of them were in the bunker while she had to do that. So they don't even know, unless they like had some small talk at some point in the last two seasons. Hey, I defibrillated myself, but they had no idea.
I love the directing on the scene when Murphy's telling Raven to go to Sanctum or go to Bardo after Maddie, help stop Cadigan. And then it pans on Lindsay Morgan's face, and then it slow-mo walks her out right into Cadigan, and it is dope. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that was really nice.
Right where we see Cadigan, he's got an escort of like seven, eight Bardoans or disciples taking him to the stone room because he's obviously got Maddie's code. He's going to go right to Judgment Day and take the test. And as he's walking in there, we flash over to Clark, Octavia, and Levitt in the elevator, who are also going for the same room because Clark's trying to get her quote-unquote justice.
Yeah.
I like to say revenge, but justice, that's fine too. And Clark, I might be talking hyperbolic here, but I thought this was the most badass Clark scene of the entire series.
I would agree. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, it was Terminator Clark.
Dude, he should have been with us live. We were like, ooh.
Ruthless. It was ruthless, Clark. And there was no other thought in her mind than getting through this hallway, chucks the nades, and just no look.
Double pistols, Deadpool style, just fucking everybody up. Oh my God.
It
was
awesome.
Terminator
Clark.
You can't watch this episode and be like, she's not that bad. It's like she was at her peak Darth Clark this episode. She's one track minded. there was no way she was going to pass the test at this point.
Yeah, she was double tapping motherfuckers too.
Yep.
She was.
And after Clark pretty much clears out the whole hallway and they're getting closer to the stone room, Octavia goes down and picks up a nice badass style sword.
Convenient.
Well, we can't skip these Levitt lines because it's so good. Levitt has that line, well, maybe we don't deserve to transcend, because he's watching Clark about to just fuck people. Mm-hmm. I was like, more killing? Jesus, dude. That's your answer?
And then Octavia brutal. Says, that's what we do.
Yeah, true that. What is that, Juan Hayden and Sky Ripa?
Yeah, really. What a good tag team.
Yeet.
Oh, and that Kathleen, thanks for rubbing it in that I didn't get to watch live with you guys.
Sorry.
We try. Sorry. We try our I know. Best, man.
Yeah. So drank. So
that
okay.
was never gonna work.
Yeah,
it was worth a shot, bro.
It's just a white light. Speaking of white light,
we ready to jump full sci-fi?
Yeah, ooh.
Let's go full
to get
sci-fi.
A new realm right here.
They see the white light. It's Cadogan in the test, which I think is so cool. I love the test. I like the purple lighting. The fact that it should transform into wherever your mind should take it, which I'm kind of upset it didn't morph for Clark, because I would have liked to see where that would have gone. But they're at a pier.
Cadogan at this
point. Just Cadogan at the pier, and I made them pause so I could take a picture of the pier and the like carvings. I thought it was going to mean something, but of course it's just a stupid pier. And then you see Callie, and she is not Callie, but I thought this actress is incredible and amazing marketing for the prequel.
I was very excited that she was back.
We're going to be calling this entity something different, I'm sure, every 5 minutes. Entity, alien, because it kind of is both. But what the entity that is Callie now tells Cadogan is that the test taker is what determines who the form of the test giver is. And it's always going to be the greatest teacher or the greatest failure of the person taking the test.
Mm-hmm. We can just call them the judge. Love. The judge.
Or the greatest love.
She said for emotional species.
Yeah, exactly.
The greatest love.
Yeah.
I loved these tears in Cadogan's eyes when he's looking at her and then he finally is like, you're not her. But before he realizes it, those tears are good.
Yeah. And she has a great line where it's like she lists out the forms that they can take for the person. And she says something like, and I guess it's, you know, all three for you. And I like that. Because, I mean, his relationship with Callie obviously is very rocky and complicated and just all over the place. And I thought that was a really good way to sum it up, like a really poetic way, rather, to sum it up.
Yeah, I want to shout out the music in this episode, too, because not only like the scored music and then also the songs they put in are all really well done, really hit you in the feels.
No
I
radioactive, though.
No radioactive.
I would have liked some radioactive in the last scene. Cool
the I'm end. Waking up. So the judge is what causes Bill to realize that Jordan and the people of Earth were right about this not being the last war. Cadogan kind of just accepts it without any hesitation, as he should, because he's looking at an alien that's transforming the setting and stuff. But
it's an epic moment. For that music and him saying, so they were right, was epic.
That's he just accepts it and moves on.
He didn't seem disappointed either. He just kind of, he was almost smiling like, ah. Yeah, look at that. That's funny. It's just a thing, you know? What's
it was similar to his reaction to when Maddie said it. He was just like, okay, I'm fine. I'm ready. Mm-hmm. I'll do it.
And that's the best case scenario.
But this brings me to a gripe that I've had, and we've been talking about it off pod a lot, of why Becca reacted the way she did when she came out of the test in the backdoor pilot episode. Because it's easy to know the word she says, because it all makes sense, the dialogue, how she was saying that no one's ready, especially not you. But the way she was physically looking and her emotions did not match up with anything we saw this episode.
So you don't know what form it took for Becca. We can just assume it was something like her worst
failure.
Yeah, her biggest failure. And they could have been, I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't always have to be your daughter.
Well, okay, she would have seen Allie then.
Probably.
And maybe the backdrop would be the freaking nukes going off on Earth while she's on Polaris. Is that the name of this station?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this too, Luke. She goes into the white light not knowing anything that's going to happen. So you're walking into this white light, not knowing it's a test, not knowing if it's a war. And all of a sudden you're seeing Allie, your failure, whatever it is. They're telling you, hey, you're taking this test. And if you fail, all mankind, all humankind is destroyed. So I guess now I could see it.
Yeah. She knows the shit show that humans are. Say it was Allie being like, are you ready to take the test to the entire fate of the universe, the humankind? No.
Yeah.
I reject. So that's, we get that information. Becca refused the test. And then the judge, Callie, says, if you do pass, you'll join our consciousness.
Consciousness. Wow.
And become infinite. Which I liked because infinite, that's nice. And I don't think it has anything to do with the infinity symbol, but I still liked it.
Conversely, if they don't like the answers, then the Gem 9 is going to infect you and your whole species is turned to crystal, like infinite or countless others before you. The stakes are high here, which we know.
Oh, big time. And I would have loved, so she says, the first question is about love. Very few species have been giving this gift, and yet you're willing to give it away for the chance to take this test, whatever the line was. And I would have loved to hear his answer. Mm-hmm. She says, why? And I would have loved to hear it, but...
As that's going on, we get a bullet right through the back of Bill's fucking head.
And the blood on Callie's face. Wild.
Anytime I bring up Game of Thrones, I'm always talking about it negatively, but that is very similar to prime Game of Thrones, early Game of Thrones, where you're not just killing people for shock factor, but it also... It just makes what am I getting at here? It's just how Game of Thrones did it early on and why it became so popular is exactly how this death felt. It was just so fucking like unexpected.
Well, that's how the 100 used to be.
It was
Charlotte, yeah. All right away, like bang, bang, bang. You're like, damn, this show is savage. They don't care. Finn, like never this, expected. Yeah. All the good ones from early 100
yeah,
episodes.
I think what you're trying to say, Luke, you know Clark's coming. We know Clark's coming. And you would think, oh, the protagonist is going to come in and interrupt and try to stop it and this and that. But she just blows his freaking brains out. And that's not, like you said, it's not out of nowhere in a way where it doesn't make sense because she's Terminator Clark right now. Yeah. And he freaking, quote unquote, turned Maddie into not dead, but worse than dead, I guess, if you want to say that.
We got to talk about pencils down. So insane. That's such an insane line. Who wrote that?
Every second of it.
Who wrote that? Pencils down.
And it sucks because she puts the bullet right through the back of his head and he's laying there on the pier and Callie's just standing there basically watching this happen. Clark's not acknowledging Callie yet and just pops like four more shots into Bill's back and then looks up. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
So and badass.
And she looks up and she says, get the fuck out of here.
Oh my God. I would have turned it off.
But this is commercial, cut to commercial. But when we come back, we're back in the bunker on Earth. They're trying to get to Nyla and Echo. But it's interesting because they're not sure. They're all kind of confused who it is. And I didn't even clock that the people that were closed in the three different sections wouldn't know where the other sections were, which I like. That's good because they're not sure who it is. I love that they say Gaia's on a hunt. The Gaia bad stunt double at the end, I can't stop thinking about it. It's so blatantly not Gaia at the end. It makes me laugh so much. It's incredible.
And so this is when Jordan offers to go find Gaia because they ran out of water. And as he's leaving, he gets a quick glimpse of Hope in the room sitting on like a throne.
Blood rain is throne.
Auntie O's throne.
And, you know, he has to stop in when he sees Hope in there, right?
I know. And this is a great scene. So basically, Jordan goes in and he's saying, what are friends for? And she like closes the door. It's such a classic. Turns around, can friends do this? And kisses him for the first time. We called that on the Shelby episode.
Where'd she learn that game?
It was cute. It was a cute moment. It was just awkward.
I know.
It's not her fault. Like we say, she only knows four people. There's four people she's basically related to. So how's she going to learn how to kiss?
I was dying for that moment, though. I love it. It's perfect.
And right before they were about to bang is when we hear the...
going straight for it.
we hear the anomaly bridge open up and Hope jumps up right away. They're back. And what we find out is they kind of fake it out with just criminals with weapons rolling through. But then, of course, our hero Raven walks through, saving the day as always.
Yeah, I wrote that it was an anomaly cock block.
I had a question because Raven says...
Jordan gets cock-blocked 24/7 when it comes to
when Jordan drops the canteen, I LOL. Yeah. That's so cute.
When he first picks it up, though, when he's talking to Indra, and Indra's like, whatever, she's guy's out on the hunt, and he's like, all right, I'll go get the water. And then he just like kind of slaps. Yeah, he like sits her on the knee. I was like, all right, Jordan, feeling at home.
It was a tough punch, too.
Yeah, I was like, you don't just hit Indra like that.
But you're right. So when Nikki Bang Bang walked through, I hate to say it, but the room groaned last night when Nikki said that's what Hatch would do. Everyone in the room groaned.
Yeah, because that's just not consistent. We've been talking about that with her character since she let Raven go. So.
Yeah, she's one of my least favorite parts of the episode. I just think that they just decided to write her one way and change that completely up off of Raven's apology where she wanted to die. And that was enough to change Nikki's whole murderous rampage to get revenge for her husband. That just didn't...
I've I feel like all they needed to do was have Raven go to Sanctum and pick up one of those big ass laser guns without any of the other guys coming in with her. But
well, they all ended up going to Bardo too. It makes sense. And it's funny. I groaned as well. I was like laughing as well, but I loved it because we love Nikki Bang Bang and I'm such a loyalist and I'm like, this is the last episode. Sure. Let's change her entire tune that she's been singing. I don't care. As long as everyone ends up happy. But that's why sometimes I'm weirdly biased and I shouldn't be critiquing shows. I love everything. It's all
but we
good.
We do get another Hatch name drop. It's what Hatch would do. It's lame. We didn't like it, but whatever. It is what it is. Raven fills everybody else up to speed. She says, I'm coming from Sanctum. Jackson's there with Murphy and Amori. If I'm Indra and like everybody else, you've got to be thinking to yourself, how the hell did you get there? They found this stone that was like unfindable to get there. And that's the only way.
Episodes.
They kind of established that this stone was completely... People had been living in this bunker for years and years and years. Nobody ever found it. Indra, Jordan, and Hope are just chilling in the rotunda room, literally digging by hands to try and get their friends out. The same friend they're trying to save from under miles of rubble comes through the portal, says, nah, we're already on Sanctum.
Wait,
Jackson's
who?
Helping him more.
Oh, yeah, they think that Raven's in the other room. Yeah.
They literally think.
Because
I don't know. And it's
I
not
totally
even,
get it. You meant that
it's not even
worth somehow
saying,
they found
like,
the stone.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, right.
They were
okay,
literally
totally.
Thinking the only chance these people ever have is us digging by hand to get them out. And Raven just pops out of the portal. No.
Yeah. So when Raven comes in to save the day, as per usual, they're all kind of catching each other up on what they know about everyone else's whereabouts. So it's I like that. I wouldn't even think that they're all confused about where they are, because, of course, we all know. A little bit of exposition for you. But this is where Hope is super smart. And says that they need a distraction, not a fight. And Jordan's talking about like the energy weapons and they're coming up with an idea.
Yeah, they're planning out their strategy. And I thought Miller did a good job because he's always a good voice of reason in these kind of meetings. Even earlier in season 5 and 6, anytime they're just talking, he's always there next to Octavia, whether it be in the bunker, whatever it is. And he's always giving good advice. He's asking the right questions. I just like to point that out because Miller's
He's a professional right-hand man.
Yeah.
He's
a great soldier.
He said something like, we still haven't come up with a plan that doesn't end with all of us dead. And that's the truth. Indra was trying to be aggressive. She says, let's get one crew. They have an army. We need our one crew army. Shade Hate is gone. They'll listen to us. Miller is a good voice of reason. Yeah. Well said.
He's basically like, he's just a top-tier strategist for our guys, our squad.
But Hope vouches for Jordan. Yeah, I got that right. Hope vouches for Jordan, says, I think Jordan was just about to give us the plan. And he says, oh yeah, it would be one that would make my father proud.
So
with a little
good
smile. They cannot help but keep calling back to mom.
So Tony watches as this recap by and she was like, I forgot Harper was just an egg donor. Like, it takes two, bitch. If you're gonna keep like saying Monty's name, say Harper's name too. That is so true.
They really
like a whole paragraph worth of it.
Yeah, they need to bring up Harper more.
That's a really good point.
Season 2, she got put through the ringer at Mount Weather.
Oh,
she was like
gosh.
One of the first people that got taken out for
the blood stuff.
I just finished season 2, so I'm going to keep talking about it.
Season 2 is the goat. Oh, God, it's great. Okay, so we do free up Nyla and Echo here. Love that Hope and Echo reunion.
He just comes in and says, look who I found. It was a reasonable way to solve that issue. Get the people, the Allegius criminals, to just do it for you. It makes sense.
With their sound weapons, that is a callback to season 5, which we haven't seen them in a little bit.
Too
right?
True. We see him again now.
Yep. So Jordan enacts his plan, and I thought this was a really smart plan. I don't know where they got the EMP from.
He made it. Yeah, he says he built it.
Okay, that's
this
fine.
Is okay. So Jordan very rarely actually reminds me of Monty, just in his zenness, his chillness. But him saying, for my first trick, I'll make an army appear or reappear, whatever he says, is so Monty. Yeah. Monty would walk in and be like, and for my first trick, like he would do it with a little more flair than Jordan. But that was a Monty ass line if I ever heard one.
And it's Jordan had an amazing episode.
Yeah, he really did. And activating that EMP, what we found out last episode is it's all power base. It's all energy base. Is that what they
energy,
said earlier?
Yeah.
Energy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when he activates that, not only does it turn off all their invisibility, we found out from Shade Hata last episode that their gun only works when their suit is connected to it and powered up, so they can't shoot at all for the time being. That's awesome. And as soon as Jordan activates that EMP, the whole entire one crew squad with their weapons comes through, and Andrea screams into the trees, which is great. Just call back to Tree Crew. They all just spread out and post up ready for this final battle.
Yeah, Bardowans think it's the final war. The bunch of dummies like, the final war is here.
I mean, could you imagine though, like, you're waiting forever for something, and then all of a sudden all these people just start coming through with guns. You're like, holy shit, it's the final war.
But again, they are not there to fight yet. They are there as a distraction. So they're just really moving into formation and halting there. Well, the insertion team is what they refer to them as, is going to make their way into the Bardo facility, for lack of a better word.
Right. They're going after Maddie, Clark, everyone in there.
Yeah. And Hope is Hope's a little scared to die. And Indra has a great line when she looks at her and she says, we all will die. When is out of our control? And then she kind of looks into the battlefield and is like, this is a good how. And I was like, fuck yeah, it is, Indra.
That is a great line for Indra.
Indra's always about the honorable death, man. This is a good death.
Except for Shade Ada, because she refuses to give him one.
Well, I mean for herself, whenever she thinks she's about to die.
What a mindset of a warrior. Just thinking pre-battle, this would be an okay way to die. Yeah. I could live with this. And boy, if that isn't the truth, think about the stakes of this fight right now. So awesome. Love Indra.
Okay, now let's pivot into the saddest scene of the episode for sure. Jax and Miller get this great reunion. Miller comes through the anomaly and he's pretty much like, whatever comes next, I'm going to be with you. Like, I'm not leaving you again. Swoon. Murphy goes, love that, but what about my reunion? Which is like classic Murphy, and then everything else is depressing.
Yeah, I just really like how Miller just kind of pops up. We get them all, like we just said, like the war is basically about to start, and then the next scene change, we just have Miller rolling into Sanctum. Now he's on a different planet from where we were. And I just really liked how efficiently they were using the stones to move characters in this episode. It's the last fucking episode. We were worried about it a little bit, of like how they're going to wrap everything up. And the stones were just a great way to do it, obviously.
This scene was so well done. Richard Harmon and Louisa were so amazing. Even Louisa just seizing out, with the black blood splatter on her face. Whew, you better stop.
I still think Jackson was perfect. The Sachin was great at just
big
showing
time.
What a failed doctor, or not a failure by a doctor, would look like. Just how he expressed himself was phenomenal.
I watched so much Grey's Anatomy that when they're pulling the knife out and then they're like, what, do they hit the adrenaline on her chest? And I know the amount of time where the beep would come. I'm like, I see it. And when it doesn't come, and Jackson just kind of puts his arms down and is like, and Richard hits us with a, do something, you're a doctor. Like, you got to help her. Oh, no.
Yeah.
She's really dead.
Now, are we going to take an L for that one? Because we said that she won't. I mean, technically, she's.
Yeah.
Somebody said the mind drive thing. So we'll take a half.
We said that we didn't think she could die because she would have died last episode. But whatever.
I will take that L because I was beating the shit out of that drum of like, there's no way they drag us along for a full episode of her gonna die and then kill her. I texted you guys because obviously I watched the episode by myself. I did it this morning, and I texted you guys when I said Jason Rothenberg's dead to me, was that moment. I was like, this is fucking bullshit. Only because at that time, obviously I'm not thinking that Transcendence is going to take her away, and the mind drive stuff wasn't what I was thinking. And I was just like, why kill her in this episode? Why not kill her last episode? So then this episode is Warpath, Murphy wants revenge, is all in on the final war. I would have rather had that, but
that would have been crazy.
I'm gonna stop right there. And that is not what the character of Murphy was. Murphy's character evolved from a total loner, somebody who was gonna get hanged at the noose because he didn't have anybody to care about. He was just a loner. He was the cockroach, and he evolved into this person that puts Amori above himself. Like, that is the character arc. That is his development. So for them to kill off Amori and make Murphy go on a warpath, that's Clark territory. Yeah. Murphy is not Clark. That would have been totally unsatisfactory. I think him choosing his love for Amori over anything else that was going on. Last episode, Amori, you're the most important person in the universe. This was the resolution to the character arc that I wanted for Murphy.
I agree, because we talked about how, you know, we were theorizing whether Murphy's going to be part of the test, but maybe he takes the test. But it really does make sense, perfect sense, that his ending has to do completely with Amori.
We all love the character of Murphy way too much, so we want him to be the protagonist and do protagonist things, but that's not what the character is. You know, we just love him, but he's not Clark.
I was just strictly speaking of if she died last episode, than what he would be doing this episode.
Right.
Would be trying to get revenge on the people that took him away from him.
Mm-hmm. Brian, I have an entire thing written out and you said every word of it. Like I have, I was going to say something and then about to say something, you would just filled it.
I was also, because I wasn't on the last episode of the podcast, I was a little bit surprised that you guys were definitively thinking that Amori was safe. I was thinking to myself, the rod is still in her torso. We are not out of the woods here. And let's be honest, she is more expendable than some of the other characters. That would have been an easy kill if they were just thinking in their heads, we got to kill some of our main characters.
What we were thinking was, she had an incredible episode 15. Hitting you in the feels with every character that was in the same room with her. So if you're going to kill her, you kill her then. Why keep her to the next episode? Yeah, but you're right, though, Brian. That's exactly what they did. They killed her anyway, and then they brought her back. It's like the most perfect.
It wasn't a logical guess. It was more in the bounds of a TV show where why kill someone in the first 5 minutes when you can end an episode on a great cliffhanger to increase appeal. I don't know. That's what we were thinking, but they did it awesome.
The only reason why it works is because of the mind drive and she stays alive to transcend. Like if she was dead, didn't come back at the end, it would have been a waste of time for these scenes to be in this episode.
I love that she survived.
Yeah.
Died but survived. I love it. That was perfect.
When they do the dancing scene where Jackson Miller and those two are dancing and when they pan to Jackson Miller dancing and Murphy is holding Amori's hand passed out like in the mind space, I'm like, this is such a great way to loop back in the mind drives and the night blood stuff to keep it relevant until the very end. It's like Game of Thrones. Why could Arya change faces if it didn't fucking matter at the end? You know what I mean? We always bring it back to Game of Thrones, but it's so nice to keep that as a relevant plot device until the very end of the series.
I also love watching anybody go through a medical emergency with night blood when she was spitting up the blood and it was black. It just looks so cool.
Shade Hada's burst of blackness was fucking incredible.
100%.
All right, so back to the aftermath of Amori's character actually dying. Murphy predictably goes right for the mind drive, is going to sacrifice his own body, put her mind drive in his head. And was he either going to sacrifice his body or die with her? Because I know we talked about this as the episode
was
going on.
It's confirmed later that he was planning on dying with
her.
Yeah, I was wrong.
I would choose a couple hours with you than the rest of my life alone.
Right. Yeah. So his body would die because of the two mind spaces.
I think he initially asks Jackson to do it for him. Mm-hmm. Jackson refuses because it is kind of ridiculous. He won't help Murphy kill himself, essentially. Yeah. Murphy picks up the scalpel himself, goes to do the deed, and Miller chimes in and says, yeah, Jackson, if it was you, I'd do the same thing.
Love.
Look at where this dude's at. This is his decision. Come on now.
Another great reason to have Miller in the room to make an impact on
Miller's
the scene.
Great.
He's amazing. A hopeless romantic in this episode.
This season needed more Miller.
He didn't do anything negative, so there's that to hang our hat on.
Well, he said get the flock out of here.
God.
Still talking about it, so.
Nah, he was good this season. The only thing that we talked about was really how he just rolled out of nowhere on Jackson in the very beginning of the season when they all left, and he didn't say anything. He's just like, all right, I'll go on this journey.
That's life on the 100, baby. Next scene is Levitt and Octavia like sweetly doing her war makeup. It's so funny. It's like, of course she has to have her war makeup on.
Is that supposed to be Lincoln's makeup? Like his?
That's interesting.
I'm pretty sure it's Lincoln. It's just like a different version.
Good for you, Levitt, for not being jealous of that. Good for you.
I thought I've seen her with that makeup on. I thought that was
I'm pretty
Octavia's
sure. I'm pretty sure after Lincoln dies, she just always has most of the time, except when she's Blood Rain, is she has the Lincoln makeup. But I'll look that up.
Interesting.
So, is that a Wiki Jimmy in the house?
Wiki Jimmy. Wiki Jimmy TV.
So we get some cool dialogue here between Octavia and Levitt, because Octavia's starting to seem a little bit vulnerable because they're talking about transcendence again. So she's asking Levitt, who is a devout believer of the Shepherd religion, what's going to happen to Bellamy? Will he transcend if Clark passes the test? And he sadly says that the scripture of the Shepherd says no. Death is a final state, and then there's nothing past it. That's kind of sad, but it's also cool that at least Bellamy's still on the forefront of Octavia's mind, and he is for this entire episode.
Okay, so Wiki Jimmy was a little bit wrong, but it's not his actual makeup, but it's supposed to resemble his tattoos on his chest.
Okay.
Okay.
But he says the thing like, death is living, my friend, only the living shall transcend. Kind of a dumb line by Octavia. Will Bellamy transcend? I feel like that was for all the young fans. So you know, Bellamy's not going to transcend.
If they were just in the mind drives, say Murphy and Maury die and their mind drives are just chilling, would they have transcended because they have a mind drive?
No, they have to be in at. To, for a mind drive to work,
or dead in the mind drive, I think is the easiest way to put it.
I think in order for it to activate, you have to put it in a body.
Okay, because I thought the mind drive, you only die if they destroy it or delete you.
The mind drive has to be in a compatible living body. When there are two together and one is not removed, they will kill the body. Mm-hmm. And once the living body is dead, I'm trying to rationalize it myself. Yeah. Once the living body is dead, then both of the mind drives die. Can they be retrieved and put in another body then?
Yeah, they always have, like, in season 6, the whole time, they have, like, the one lady has her family member on her necklace, and you just can put it in. They're just waiting for a Nightblood, so I always just assume they're fine.
It's a little tricky, because it's like, where, because Amori's body died, so why didn't she come back in Amori's body?
Because then Gabriel has to destroy Josephine's mind drive, or she could just keep coming back. That's the point. That's why he destroys it. So Josephine doesn't keep coming back. He takes the mind drive out and destroys it.
Yeah. So
you're saying they're not alive unless they're
in the body.
So basically the question could be, does Gabriel transcend? Because his mind drive, he had a mind drive in his head, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. And then his mortal body died, but his mind drive is still active in that body, is it not?
It's not about the mind drive being active. It's about the mind drive being in a biological body. Yeah. So that's what both Amori and Murphy state is at the time of transcendence.
Wow. And they only had that several hour span for this to be doable. That's so cool. I think I kind of knew that, but it really just hit home with me.
I have that note written down. When they're pumping Echo's heart, Octavia's really just putting all of her eggs into the basket of, we're about to transcend any second. Keep pumping that chest because they're going to end. Like, it's like,
what else can you do, though?
Because it was death awesome, otherwise too. For so everybody. Dope. So that
Levitt shot and Echo shot. And she's like, keep them alive. What do you want them to do to keep them alive? They just have bullet holes in bare hands. You can plug up the bullet holes with sticks.
It's cool that we're bringing this up now because this is directly linked to the conversation Levitt and Octavia are having right now.
Yep.
Which is, Octavia is now convinced that death is the end, so she is just doing her best to preserve, and we'll get to that. So let's jump back here.
Either way, transcendence or extinction, I would have liked to live a little first. Mm-hmm. Love
their
love,
cute
Jason.
Lines get broken up by Raven and Echo just going on invisible. Their whole moment is just that's the big reveal. We find out that Jordan's whole plan was a distraction, as B-Tom said earlier, to get the insurgent team in. They wanted to get these two in so they could help Clark with the test, or is that what the whole
they're trying to kill Bill.
But Raven is still on the mission that Murphy sent her to. I think the zoom in on her face, she is committed to killing Bill. That's the plan here. Help
right.
Clark with
so,
the test.
Yeah, because no one knows besides Clark and Octavia how far Bill's gotten with Maddie. I mean, Levitt knows too, but I mean, anybody in the or on Earth. I mean, I know that Gaia had that whole conversation, too, saying that if you kill Bill, it doesn't matter. They still have their faith. But I guess they're just saying, OK, he's trying to take the test, probably. Let's kill him and move on.
Raven asks, what happened here? Octavia says, we did. Love that line, because there's just bloodied bodies all over the place. The conclusion that they come to is if Clark cannot stop the test and the test proceeds, they're going to come down and judge us and see the remnants of humanity fighting against each other. One of them says, well, that wouldn't be a good look. So what they decide is that Echo, Octavia, and Levitt are going to try and go outside and stop the two factions from fighting. Just no bloodshed. Finally, no bloodshed in this show. And who's the fourth? Raven is then going to confront Bill and Clark in the portal. However it may be, they just say, stop what's happening, help however you can. And this is how this group of four people split up from here.
The salty line that Levitt throws in there to Echo calling her, they're talking about if they fail the test, Gem 9 is going to be released and destroy the species. And he looks right at Echo, goes, the spy understands. And she gives a little half-assed apology, but he's rightfully pissed. She beat the shit out of him and left him to die.
I totally forgot.
The whole species.
I was like, what's he so pissed about?
Echo puts her fist out. She's like, we good?
Truly.
Moving right along, we get Clark in the judgment. I call it the celestial plane because it kind of looks like that.
Yeah.
So Clark is in the judgment room or whatever, and Lex.
I'm sorry. You said you liked the name Celestial Plane, yeah, and then you proceeded to not use the name.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
You played yourself.
I decided mid-cue. I was like, it just don't sound right when I say it out loud. So Clark in the Celestial Plane, formerly known as the Judgment Room, and Lexa is her guy.
Her guy.
Ooh.
We audibly were like, woo!
Well, I'm pissed because we always watch with closed captioning and it said Lexa before panning to Lexa. And I was like, fuck, who else was it going to be? Well,
we
but
knew,
still.
We guessed. We didn't know.
I would have heard it from the voice. Like, you hear the voice. I would have liked my heart to flutter by itself, knowing that Alicia Denham Carey came back at my heart.
The question I want to pose to the group here is, we know that this was total fan service. Above everything else, this was fan service to bring Lexa back.
Totally.
Do we think this was the best person for Clark? Would there have been a more logical person that fits the description of biggest failure, person you love most, or what was the other one? Greatest teacher.
Would that be
Lexa?
In this scenario with Bellamy dead, I think it should have been Bellamy. He literally is, if you want to say love, it could be friendship love. I'm not going to try to get into that, but he should be considered her biggest failure. And I think that it would have made more sense storyline-wise with Bellamy. Trust me, I freaking love Lexa, and I did the exact thing you guys all did with the woo when she showed up. And Lexa makes sense with the love thing. That's fine, but I do think in the context of this storyline that Bellamy would have made more sense.
But also, doesn't Maddie fit that category too? And that's what she ends up saying at the whole end of the episode, how much she failed Maddie, because that's also an insane
Maddie's still
failure.
Alive, though.
Well, I mean, it could take the face of anybody, yeah. I'm guessing. So, like, it doesn't have to be a dead person.
Right.
But so, yeah, Maddie makes sense too. And I just honestly think, just like Tags just said, that Lex's fan service and Maddie isn't enough fan service because she's alive and we have her somewhere else.
And Bellamy runs into the problem of the behind the scenes outside the show's capability. So that's, I'm completely with you.
Yeah.
But I'm just taking it as we have to just be happy that it's Lexa, because they weren't going to bring Bellamy back after just killing him. Cause not only does it take away the shock factor, would we even care as much?
Yeah. But can you imagine though, the whole point of this celestial being is giving you the test, and it's, if it was Bellamy showing up, it's like, hey, first of all, Bellamy was right. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to start asking you these questions and then telling you that you killed Bellamy for what? One person. And you know, and start.
I think the irony of her seeing Bellamy while taking the test that she killed Bellamy for believing in would have been beautiful,
yep.
But it was always going to be Lexa. When you take the fan service and the, it was going to be lucky.
Yeah. The dialogue would have been much better
if it was
Bellamy.
Oh, I was going to say it would have been so much more intense. Clark would have been sobbing the entire time. It would have been different.
Yeah.
So different if it was Bellamy
but
versus Lexa.
Trust me, if it's not Bellamy, then I'm Lexa. Very happy it's Lexa. And I read too, and it's agreeable. Like, it could have been Abby too if you didn't want Abby to be Ravens. Abby could have been the person who shows up for Clark.
True. It could have been a lot of people
It could have been her dad. Like, it could have been anybody. Clark had a lot of choices.
I die on the hill that it should have been Finn for Raven, but whatever. We'll take Abby. But I want to talk about that when we get to her.
Okay.
Sure. The judge, the whole concept of the judge taking the form of anybody is just a layup for fan service. So I don't think they were going to miss that.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah,
and this show is just incredible at getting actors that have been on the show in the past to come back for specific mind drive reasons, or whether it be visions or hallucinations. It's awesome. That's one of the highlights of the 100.
I would have given a lot for Octavia to take the test just to see Pike again.
She would have saw Lincoln, Bellamy, and a million other people before Pike, probably, though.
Yeah, that's probably true, but it would have been sick. I just love his Comic-Con intro was hilarious. Like, what's up, 100 fans? It's your favorite character.
It's so good.
Nah, yeah, Pike, I would say, let's see, and this is, you know, obviously not needing to be done, but Lincoln, Bellamy, and then maybe Pike, I guess, would be the order I would put it
Indra.
In.
Well, Pike's just ribs.
Yeah,
but that's not fan service. I don't need more Indra. Like, give me actual. Okay, so since we're talking about this, the Lexa stuff, and everyone knows Lexa is my wife. So, but it didn't hit as much truly because it wasn't actually her. I felt things, but I didn't feel I didn't feel season three things. Clark realizes right away it's not her, and she's pretty stone-faced, which Lexa pretty much always is. But I loved it, but I didn't feel like I was going to die, which is how I usually feel.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a very powerful scene to have her turn around, see Lexa, and then hug her, and then Lexa, aka, you know, quote-unquote, saying, it's not me, I'm not her. And then she says, I know, but I'm, you know, and she hugs her anyway. And then she does, like you said, she's stone-faced the whole time, meaning Lexa, whatever we want to call her.
Yeah.
Lexa, fake Lexa.
There's so much good dialogue in this. It's we can try and go through it quickly, but basically Lexa says, we can't stop what's been set in motion. Species now going to be judged through you, Clark. Why'd you kill this unarmed man? And then she says, I killed my daughter. And this is kind of brutal. Lexa looks at her and goes, is Maddie dead? Knowing that she's not. And she said, no, but she will be because of him. Again, from last episode, I'm about to, once I, whatever this happens, I'm going to go kill Maddie after this. It's like, Jesus.
Well, or she's saying it that way, or if they fail, she's dead too.
Either way, it's brutal.
But Clark is very set on the idea that she has no regrets. She would do the same exact thing about killing Bill, no matter what the consequences were, because she's one track minded.
I think when we got to this point and we knew like Raven was coming, and I'll die on the hill that I don't like that the trailer gave us that much.
Hated it.
But the fact that Raven was coming, I figured that they were going to eventually somehow pass. But we were flirting with the fact that Clark fails, and that was the ending we were guessing, that she fails and it's over.
Yeah, she says it's not revenge, it's justice. This is Clark saying this. And then Lexa has the sick blood starts talking in Trigata slang and has the sick blood must have blood reference. Or I'm like, you, yeah, baby, gotta have her doing that. And then she says, you don't know my pain. Lexa says she could, but then she says, Clark comes up and says, feel me holding Lexa as she dies. Feel me seeing someone else wear my mother's face and feel me murder my best friend to save my child only to have her die anyway. Which is all of us. Yes, this is exactly how we all feel. It's fucking brutal.
Eliza was amazing in this.
So amazing.
The one thing I wrote down was, I said, hell yeah, Eliza, say it with your chest, baby girl, because she was killing it. I was so into it.
Agreed. Yeah, she was really good this episode. It felt like an old Clark episode. Not that Eliza's ever not been great, but I just think some of the stuff that's been written for her this season has fell flat for me. But this whole episode felt like old powerhouse Clark.
It just cracks me up that she knows she's in the middle of a test right now with the fate of humanity, and she's just arguing with Alexa.
Yeah.
She's like, you're a piece of shit. Yeah.
I think she walked in, killed Bill, and knew she was going to be fighting an uphill battle. So, you know.
And that's the thing. She goes directly at, quote unquote, Lex's throat, calling the entity and that conscious collective consciousness hypocrites. And they absolutely are, because they're they're just making all these species take a subjective test. And if they don't live up to their ideals, they just kill them all.
Yep.
And that's when she has the amazing quote. It starts something like, have I ever pulled the lever to commit genocide? Yes, I have. But did love make me do this? You're damn right it did.
You're damn right
it
did.
She just is so confident in herself and just the character that she's become. It just makes so much sense. I fucking love Clark. She was great.
Yeah. Transcendence really is just like a judgy fucking high school girl, man.
Show us what you've got.
Regina George is Transcendence. Christ.
Yeah. I just, the beginning of the scene, I guess, basically when they get the pleasantries out of the way and she says, like, your species must now be judged. And I was, before she finishes the quote, I was just sitting there like, your species must now be judged through you, the person who just brutally murdered someone right in front of me. Like, let's do this thing, I guess.
This is the entire series too. It's been Clark grappling with, are all of these atrocities that I do, are they good? Are we the good guys? Because wherever we go, people die. And now it is this subjective entity literally judging her for everything she's ever done. It's cool. And that's really been the theme of the show, is how Clark and our heroes react to these atrocities that they commit. And are they doing it for the right reasons? Are they the good guys? Are they the bad guys?
There's an epic, I think it's season 5 trailer, and in every trailer for every season, there's like a shot of Clark holding a gun up to somebody, and she's like, maybe there are no good guys. So dope. Because Abby's like, be the good guys. Monty's like, we can do better. We have to do better.
She's just a yeah. badass with the pistol, man.
Yeah, she is. Always so Clark it. Fails, and we get the you come play stay or don't. Love that. Gotta hear that from Lexa. That made me feel things for the record. But this is the mind space with Murphy and Amore. Greatest.
Get a nice Josephine name drop in this scene. Love you, Sarah Thompson.
I know, right? Shout out. I wanted to ask you guys, wait, where's the quote? When he says, the last time I asked you to dance, you
that's
what?
That's the beginning of season 6 when the red toxin freaks her out.
I was wondering the same
thing.
He finds the iPod, you know, whatever you want to call it.
He's singing
sure.
And he starts playing the music real loud. He's dancing. He's trying to get Amore to dance while she's trying to get into the door with her knife. And she's like, get out of my way. And then all of a sudden, she just starts coming at him with the knife.
There's some great banter here. He's saying, like, I remember where we first met in this desert. And they're like, love at first, knife to throat. He's fucking too.
I feel like he had a nice haircut too in this mind space.
Handsome.
I feel like
he'd be looking great in the mind space.
He had like the buttons of his shirt undone a little bit.
Yeah, was that a corduroy button up?
Yeah.
I died. You did. Not acceptable. So good.
Yeah, Maury's smart. She figures out. She knows what's going on, and because of her interactions with Clark and their whole season 6 adventure, she understands the situation. The mind drive puts two consciousness in when they're in the same body. She puts the whole Murphy's plan together and starts freaking out, begging Jackson to wake Murphy up and take her out of her body so he can live on. And of course, Brian, you were saying it earlier, his whole character developed into this. This is not only just ideal because Amore is dead now, like this is Murphy wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
This is cool. So Jackson Miller obviously dancing. Which is so cute to just think of. They start dancing. So then they start hearing the song after Maury's arguing with him, saying, you can't do this. Can't let me do this. That's when the song starts playing. It's the first of the three good songs, which is a Vance Joy song, which I really liked. That's what I was talking about, which I really like the tying together the mind drives, the night blood, all that stuff with the pan out of them dancing. I thought that was really well done.
Because Miller and Jackson didn't know the state of what transcendence and the test was going on, they really thought this was them saying goodbye and mourning their two friends that are dying. Mm-hmm. They think this is the end of Amoria Murphy. So
wow.
I saw some
comments
of people online. Why the hell are they dancing at a time like this? It wasn't like they were happy dancing. This was their way of paying tribute to their friends that they just
literally
helped die in peace.
Reminded me of Harry and Hermione slow dancing. Although they're romantic. Miller Platonic. And Jackson are romantically entangled, but same somber theme, I would say. I was getting the same vibes.
Yeah.
This next scene is so on par for Clark because Clark comes out after she failed and Raven's like, hey, want to fill me in? And Clark is, again, just leaving everyone hanging. You hold so much information in that beautiful head. Start telling people things. Fill them in. Raven's like, wait, come back. I need to know. Go. Are we dead? Are we dying? What's going on here? Bill's on the floor, dead as fuck. It's crazy, right?
Bill being on the floor, dead as fuck, completes Raven's mission so she can start thinking about things logically. And Clark does tell her she failed.
Yeah.
And in Clark's head, the entire species is going to be Gem 9 dead and very soon. So she doesn't have time to spend her last minutes with Raven. We're going to die with Maddie.
I agree. But also, it's Raven. I mean, she's day one. If you're about to die, you would think you want to spend 1 second with Raven if you're in the same room.
Clark's always been Maddie or bust.
I know, but still.
Clark does give Raven the credit in saying that it should have been you and not me. And that's when I think she just runs right out of the room. That's pretty much the last thing she says. And the white light, this is the first time in the entire series we've seen it, I guess last two seasons, it turns red.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Raven walks up to it. It has a cool line about it. She's saying like, oh, I'm about to touch a pulsar right now. And she just goes right for it. Of course she does, because she's Raven. She saves the day all the fucking time.
I thought the same thing. I was like, of course she would know what this is called too. Yeah, so now we're not on the pier anymore. It turns into the Ark, of course, for Abby, or for spoiler alert. for Raven, it's Abby, which is really cool. I loved it. I wasn't even thinking who would it be for Raven. I was so wrapped up in what it had been.
I yelled out Sinclair. Well, I yelled out. What's that guy's name?
Sinclair really only fit the greatest teacher.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it could have been either or, but since they already brought Sinclair back for her defibrillation, nailed that time, back in season four, I think that this was a better choice to have Abby come back in. She's fresher. A lot of people are saying, like Brian said, I'll die on the Finn Hill. I think that Abby is the more relevant one. Finn would have been amazing too, but I think people are over Finn. It's been so long, and I think that Abby was more of a presence in Raven's life, like moving forward, especially since they came from the Ark. So I'm on the Abby.
And Jason knows that Abby is Kyle's favorite MILF in the world. So he did
this
it for
is
you.
The truth. This is amazing. This is two beautiful women debating the fate of the human race.
We were like, dude, Kyle's going to lose his shit.
She came back and I was like, let's go.
Anyway, quick question. That was, I can't even picture it in my head. It wasn't the ring that they spent the 5 years.
It
was the Ark. It was the OG.
It was literally the Ark.
Yeah. I want to point out that Raven sees Abby, takes one step towards, and is the quickest to realize and says, you read our thoughts and take the form of someone we love. So dope. Raven's the best. So smart. Incredible.
I would have only expected that out of Gabriel and Raven.
I guess Becca didn't figure that out quick enough.
Yeah, it's true.
Because Raven's better.
That's Alien 101. They take the form of a loved one to make you more calm. Is this a foreign concept to you guys?
No, contact, it happens. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
It's a famous thing that aliens do. I would have been like, oh, a dead guy.
Yes, but you're
an alien, actually.
Yeah, but you're in this like sci-fi thing. They don't know what transcendence is. They walk in it. It could be heaven. It could be Abby. It could be heaven. They don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Literally. Brian, what do you have to fucking say to that?
I'd probably just poop myself, honestly. If I was like taking the test for all of humanity, I'd crack.
Let's talk about the message of their dialogue that they start getting into, because Raven is awesome in this scene. And she is such a diehard for Clark when she just starts saying that, because Abby, the alien judge, is saying that they failed. The human race failed. You're going to be wiped out. Clark is the reason you guys failed. She came here. She just didn't fit our standards or whatever she says. And Raven says that she gave up her soul so we could keep ours. Mm-hmm. This is not you owe it to us to let us survive. We came this far. We did everything we could so we could live. Please don't wipe us out. She starts begging to let the human survive.
Right? I love Abby's. First of all, I missed Abby's like scritchy voice. I really liked it, but she's like, she committed atrocities. She doomed you. I'm sorry. It's so savage.
Yeah. So let me ask you guys a question. Do you think Raven's experience with Hatch made that answer happen for the end of the season?
Because 100%.
Because throughout the whole entire series, she's totally against Clark. Yeah. All the way up to season 6, she's like, get the hell out of my face, Clark, man. You keep making these decisions, and I don't give a shit what you have to say. I don't care if you apologize. Her quote in the early season 6 when Clark goes to apologize, she's like, you apologize, and then you do some more shit. You apologize, and then you do it again. Exactly the quote right there.
That's great writing.
Yeah.
No, that actually, I didn't think about it really until you put it out like that, but that makes the earlier episodes this season a lot more powerful. So I'm sure when you binge this season as a whole, that sticks out more, that Raven's learning experience is she had some actual character growth in the final season.
And that'll be the one reason why Nakara needs to happen, because that episode we didn't care for, but they have their conversation in that episode.
Yeah.
Clark and Raven.
So then they transition to the battlefield, because Abby's pretty much showing her, you think you could do better, but here it is. Open the door number one. They show Shade Hada, which, what a little bitch. Come on.
See, I'm fine with it. Shade I thought Hada. It was good because what did you think they was his ending was going to be?
Shade
Hada
represents.
Alive.
Shade Hada
I think
represents,
he shouldn't have been in this episode at all.
No, Shade Hada represents exactly what Abby or this species thinks humans are.
He represents the antithesis of what humanity is supposed to be in the judge's eyes. Octavia preaches for the good, and Shade Hada is the representation of the exact opposite of what they want joining their collective. That's Shade Hada's job. Yeah,
I agree.
And also, how else does his story finish? He had to be there. He had to confront people, try and stir the pot. and
he served doesn't work out. He served as a plot mover in so many different ways that I thought was possible, whether it be the early peace mover with the Children of Gabriel, or it's the distraction last episode to help Clark and them on Bardo, and then it's the final part of the test. He served so many, and we love J.R. Bourne. Hell so yeah. I don't know, Kathleen. I don't know. You're flipping.
I mean,
on me.
I think, Kathleen, I would agree that if he died, if he had the death, maybe Indra kills him a couple episodes ago, whatever it is, he's not needed. But if he's alive, he needs to be in that part. He's the one who makes sense for this end scene.
I was pissed right before they go to commercial. You just see him lining up with his metal eye patch and just ready to pull the trigger
on our boy Levitt, dude.
Yeah,
I just think that. It's interesting that these are two big bads and Cadogan dies right the fuck away. And so does Shade Hater, really. He stirs the pot, sure. And I totally get it. And I love J.R. Bourne. I'll take any hot boy J.R. Bourne in my life that I can. But and we'll get to it. His death scene is a cornball to me. When he just is like, juice drain, juice down, and walks right out to the middle, in the middle of the field, and Indra just has a fucking bazooka laser gun, and it's just like, bop. Seriously, you weren't.
I think
trying to
be
aware.
Against us on this one.
Yeah, because he is still technically the leader of all the criminals and shit. He's assuming they're going to listen to me.
That's also what the grounders react to. Yes, someone saying. Blood must have blood, and just chanting that. That's how they go to war.
I would have liked to fight.
He was trying to grab leadership by the throat in that situation. Just run onto the scene. I'm Shade Hater. Look at my pain. I'm freaking out. We're going to win this war. And if Indra wasn't there to shoot him with a bazooka, who else is stepping up? He would have taken charge of that army, and they would have fought. And
Kyle, what do you think?
I just think that it's... It's really funny that you're saying that, Kathleen, because you were the one that was like, in the trailer, when Shane Haydick says, "Too strange, you drown," I was like, let's go!
And during the episode, I was like, let's go! But in hindsight,
I think it makes sense.
Because he was there.
The one thing I didn't appreciate was that up until now, he was very methodical and planned everything out. This seemed a little bit more rash.
That's what I'm literally saying.
It kind of reminds me of Varys's death in the last season of Game of Thrones. He was so playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers, and then last episode he just spills the beans and
I like to think of it as this is like his second, third, fourth chance at a life. So he was supposed to be locked up in the prison cell and gets released on a lucky whim by Octavia and Clark. So there's not a lot of planning he could do on a foreign planet with technology that's evolved millions of years past where he left off. So he's also in very, very foreign environments. And in my opinion, I thought he stayed true to his barbaric character.
Cool, if you're Shade Hater, you don't know 100% that Transcendence is real. And we know that his goal is to reign. So the strategic part of it was him hiding in the trees and getting ready for this war to start, because he takes command, his side wins, he's the commander again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all it needs to be for him.
And that might have been the path it went.
Yep.
I do love Juice Strange's down, though. Blood Must Have Blood is sick. Yeah. That is like a lit-ass line. Then absolute King Levitt jumps in, tells them it's not the last war. Cadogan was wrong. We're all being tested right now. He's pretty woke at this moment, like really woke. And then he just gets lit up. And that blood on that white pajama.
I do want to say it really works, though, because he is a disciple. So that's the only reason he didn't get totally shot from the other side instantly. So hell yes, Jason.
This is the second great song. It's an REM cover, the one I love. I thought this was so effective in this scene. First of all, before Shade Hater shoots him, he says, "History is written by the victors," which I really like. It's just like, bop. At the sick line, but O goes to Levitt and Echo's like, Jesus fucking follows her, which is really gets me in my heart.
Goes to Levitt. She's going through the battlefield to Levitt, right?
She's dodging bullets.
Right? Wild. She runs out.
That's pretty reckless, Octavia. Yeah. Come on.
Now,
I
don't want to be the one to say this, but, you know, obviously we love Jason, we love Levitt, but this seems like it makes more sense if that was Bellamy, because Bellamy could have done the same thing. He, you know, our theory about how if Clark didn't kill him, and this is just we're guessing, if Clark didn't kill him, he would have been there with Levitt. Maybe that turns him when he sees Maddie getting tortured. He's wearing the white pajamas too.
So he's
the one going out doing his total same Bellamy do better line.
I can hear him saying it in Levitt's speech. I can hear Bellamy saying it.
He's the same guy. Like, nothing has changed. He says the do better line, and now Octavia is 100% going after him, and so is Echo.
That's what that was definitely supposed to be. Yeah. Echo and Octavia, the two most important characters in his life that aren't Clark. That would have been beautifully
but trust written. Me, man. Yeah. I love that Jason got it. Yeah. So.
But I like this. So they're getting Jason and lifting him up, and you see Hope in the background trying to jump the barrier to go get them too, which I love. And Jordan's kind of holding her back, and then they turn around and sprint backwards once they start pulling Jason or Levitt off. Ooh, I love this because that's exact Hope. You know, Hope, she's so reckless too. She'd jump. She'd be right behind them.
But if she was only went, going then Echo, because then Octavia was there, not not Levitt at all.
Not right. Levitt, but well, especially
one,
Echo.
She's
though.
One of Levitt's angels. She's going for Levitt.
but it's, oh, and Echo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%.
Echo as well. Yeah. But the intense music really did it for me. Jordan and Hope run off, and Echo kind of explains to Octavia, I lost Bellamy. I won't lose a sister as well. And she's hit now. Levitt and Echo are hurting pretty bad. So then Abby and Raven are walking through this chaos on the battlefield. Abby has this voiceover. We hear Hope scream like, Antio! Huge scream from Hope. Clark goes to Maddie at this point and says, I failed everyone. This is from the trailer when she has her hands in their face. I didn't even think we were going to get that scene at this point. It's a lot of chaos. So Levitt is pep-talking Octavia, and this is when Octavia decides that she's going to go out and do the speech. Mm-hmm. She looks at Jordan and Hope and says, don't let them die. The dead don't transcend.
This is when she looks at Indra and tells Indra,
ooh, love that trust from Indra.
Yeah. What is, do you have the line? What she yells
she just
at her?
Says, she just hold your fire.
And then Indra commands all of one crew to stop shooting, to let Octavia give that intense speech that's coming up.
Shade Ada is angry at this point. He's like, fuck. And this is the Juice Strangers down. So he kind of loops around, comes through the one crew, gets them all hyped up. Like you guys said, Juice Strangers down. And then Indra and Trigata slang for my mother. Boom.
Yeah, and
Black
I mean,
dude,
a couple grounders start chanting it.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
he's
the
starting
whole...
to swing the mood.
Yeah, he's just trying to take over because Indra's surrendering and he's saying, no, I'm the commander here. Yeah. You know, you're going to follow me. And that's why, Kathleen, it makes sense that he's screaming that and they start to follow. So it looks like, again, it's starting to turn the wrong way. And then Indra just lights them up.
The absolute last casualty of humanity goes down as being J.R. Bourne. That's insane.
I'll take it. Yeah. Now, there's a good line. I don't know if you said this already, Kathleen, but a good line that we missed is Abby during the war going on. And as Levitt's trying, Raven's talking Abby into letting them transcend. And, you know, she's saying, see, look, Levitt's going to help.
Reaching them.
Yeah, he's reaching them. And then she says no and looks over at J.R. Bourne. And then, yeah. So she says, despite the beauty humans are capable of, you can't break free from the cycle of violence.
Mm-hmm. Huge theme of the 100.
Yeah. Octavia's speech is one of my favorite scenes only because this one, if you ever seen it, it is wrapping up an arc in one line. So she's saying, what the hell are we doing here? You swore an oath to fight for all mankind. Look around you. We are mankind. We are one crew. If I kill you, I kill myself. If we keep killing each other, there won't be anyone left to save. Our fight is over, Indra. And my brother believes what you do, transcendence, whatever that means, which I love, whatever that means. Just the writer's a little nod. I know that nobody knows yet. It's within reach. He died for that. And for that belief and for that, he'll never get there. But this is the line. The only way to win is not to fight. And the fact that Octavia, Blood Reina, Sky Reaper, who's killed hundreds of people, is saying that is character growth summed up in one damn sentence.
Absolutely amazing. And Indra is the OG for Octavia. She's the first one. She pulls her sword out of her boot and drops it right there. And all of one crew drops their weapons. And it fades over to the general of the disciples who's having this internal struggle. And he just decides to have some faith.
Says for all mankind.
Yeah, so Octavia runs back and Levitt's like, nice speech, a bloody nice speech. Hope's pumping Echo's heart. And I can't believe Echo is the first to transcend.
Yeah, maybe she's the closest
love
to
that
dying.
For her.
So that, yeah.
Love that journey for her.
I kind of thought that too. Maybe the spirits, can I call it spirits? Is that
you can call
it
whatever you want to.
Okay, the spirits like identified she was that close to death and just gave it a little wink. Okay, you made
well,
it.
Well, I think we said out loud, oh, because I thought the whole thing with Raven was give us more time. So I thought the ending was going to be that we're not going to kill you, but we're going to give you more time. So I think we said out loud that, okay, well, we'll let Echo and some of the ones that are dying transcend because they don't have any more time. And then the rest of you figure it out. And then this everyone just started transcending. Yeah. We're like, okay.
Yeah, so we get this montage of everyone realizing that transcendence was real. They're going to go to their version of heaven, whatever it is. And I hated this line. Maybe you guys can talk me out of it. But as soon as Jordan starts to transcend, he says, this is what I saw when I was adjusted, right?
So, first of all, I wanted to shout out Jordan because his oh my God was probably the best acted line in this entire show. His oh my God was so like, it made my heart flutter. I agree at first when I saw that lame, but something had to come from that. And Gabriel was seeing all of these people. I just rewatched season seven, episode one. And before Russell turns into Shade Ada, it's Russell and Jordan have a conversation. And Russell, they're looking at the anomaly on the floor, and Russell's pretty much, oh, you got adjusted. You must have seen this. I designed Sanctum in its honor, whatever the fuck it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know what? Maybe this is relevant. I don't like that he saw that, but I don't care.
I agree with you only because they planted that seed early in the season and there was payoff for it. Otherwise, it would have been one of those lines like the gun thing. Why the hell did they include that dialogue where Russell Prime and Jordan both kind of saw something from being adjusted and didn't do anything with it? It was cheesy that they forced it in with Jordan's last spoken dialogue, but whatever. What are you going
to
do?
No, you're right. I prefer a weak payoff than no payoff to something planted early.
Right before we move on, since I guess that's kind of a little bit towards the end of the scene, when Raven is making the speech and she's speaking, they do pan very quickly to Raven, and Raven has like such a nice look of satisfaction on her face. Fuck yeah, Octavia, go get it.
That's cool. And then we also have to talk about, as everyone's transcending on Bardo, we flash quickly over to Amori and Murphy post-coital, and they're in the mind space, and they're aren't they like, this is cool or something like that?
They literally just take it. They look, they're snugging, and then they just kind of both look up at the ceiling and just let it. I loved it. It was hot.
Think about what their situation is. They are resigned to their fate of only having a couple hours left with each other, and they know that they know what transcendence is, and they must have just seen each other start to glow and be like, oh, they did it. Sweet. We're transcending. Awesome. We're part of this.
Glowing gold is better than just dying.
Absolutely.
Better than going to hell.
Especially for Murphy, who doesn't want to die. Yeah.
I do have a comment on this. I want to bring up a discussion point, but let's finish the last transcendence point, which is we flash to Clark holding Maddie in her arms. And I think you, Jimmy, said something live. Oh, I didn't know you could just resist transcendence. Because it doesn't make any sense why you'd be able to do that. But Maddie is, that didn't need to be included really, but Maddie is trying to stay because she knows that Clark is the reason, is Clark failed the test. She's not going to be someone to transcend.
She doesn't want
to
leave Clark. Yeah.
Maybe you can resist transcendence because you can decline transcendence.
Right.
So, but no, nobody else was able to resist. It was totally dumb.
Yeah, I do think it was dumb, but I think it, since they made declining a thing, that it's fine for Maddie's character just not to want to leave Clark. It's definitely corny, and I don't even want to talk about dumb anymore because I still think transcendence in general as a storyline is dumb.
Before we move on, there are two things I want to say. Just the fact that Hope and Jordan go together, which was cute. Octavia saying Bellamy was right before getting sucked up. I was like, this hurts. That hurt me because I don't know what we wanted, but I remember I wasn't on the Bellamy death episode, but I don't know that I wanted Bellamy to be right because I almost wanted him to be a villain to make the death feel better for me. And the fact that he was right and he could have just been alive and they all could have, like me and Luke talked about this before, maybe if our Earth crew wasn't as stubborn and fucking assholes as they are, they feel the need to fight so hard. They could have just talked to Kat again and be like, all right, dude, if you think transcendence is a thing, of course they don't know you can deny it. So whatever. It's just a lot to take in that Bellamy was right. And we get that line in the script.
It was an intense ending for all of these characters, at least most of them besides the last squad. But before we move on to the last 5-minute scene of Clark, I want to bring this up. This might not even be something we want to keep, but I saw this conversation on Reddit going on. And
on where, dude? Online, you mean?
A blog online. There were people saying that there was a way for Jason Rothenberg to be savvy enough to have made Clexa Endgame. Did you see any of this where if we were talking about Gabriel destroying the mind drive earlier, mm-hmm. if Gabriel never did that and they put the mind drive into someone.
Do you mean the flame?
The flame.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't
all the commanders
have transcended?
Yep, they would have.
And then Lexa would have agreed to come back and she would have just been on that beach at the end.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, my friend actually texted me that today.
Wouldn't that have blew your mind specifically?
I mean, I would have thrown up on the spot.
Sitting there on the beach. I don't even
that would have been insane.
I was gonna say. How would they have salvaged the flame though? What,
no, they're saying if they didn't
destroy the flame in the first place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because Amori and Murphy proved if your mind drive is in someone's biological body, you transcend, and that could have been a thing for all the commanders.
Clexa to be end.
Oh, I'm just.
Oh my god, we're gonna die on Twitter now.
Amori is endgame.
Everyone knows it.
So let me.
There's so many endgames.
I'm gonna talk about this right now. We can say if we want to hold it for later or talk now. But Kathleen was talking about Bellamy being right. I said, and I think a lot of us agreed in that episode that you weren't in, Kathleen, that we kind of wanted Bellamy to be right, but we wanted somehow Bill to be wrong. But this made Bill right, too. And I think that's a problem. I got it. I mean, I just think that this whole entire season, anything Bellamy related is just bad and everything else is good. I think that episode 13, Etheria, is so awful now because why would Bellamy see anything? Okay, so say it's the being showing him something, right? Why would he see Bill? You know, it makes sense to maybe see his mom if somehow they're talking to him and he's, what, taking the test somehow without going through the anomaly?
Yeah, Bill's not a higher being. Why would he see Bill?
He saw Bill.
Yeah, I know what I'm saying.
Right. So that's
seeing the mom makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so seeing the mom's fine. Why would he have the conversation with Bill? And why would he pray to the shepherd who is Bill? He's not praying to the celestial beings. He's praying to the shepherd, and then the weather clears for him. Now, we said it had to be a simulation because why the hell would that make sense, and why would that not just be something really stupid? But he sits around the fire with another disciple and prays to the shepherd, Bill, sees Bill, and then the weather shifts, and he's like, oh, my gosh, all mankind, let's go. You know, it's just, I think that is just totally awful. If they're telling the truth, if it's not a simulation, then Bill's right too. And the only thing Bill did to be a villain is to kill Becca and to torture Maddie. And everything else, we agree, has to be good because he knew that it would lead to all mankind transcending. And he was not actually the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with literally everything you just said.
Yeah.
I think that's more of a gripe rather than like there's nothing we can analyze there because you're right. Like everything you're saying is to me at least just it's so bad. It was just that was the bad writing.
I just didn't know if I'm like taking it too much or if anyone could talk me out of it, but I just think that's
when people talk about this season and you see all the hate of it online, a lot of it stems from exactly what you just laid out there.
That's always going to be a stain on the season and this show, but mm-hmm. you either accept it or you don't. And I think the satisfactory ending that we got despite all that garbaggio is pretty impressive.
That's why I wrote I loved it on the Twitter.
Which is why I wanted this episode to not be about that, because we've already gotten our grievances about like Bellamy out of the way, you know? And they are grievances. That's mm-hmm. the stain on the show, but it is what it is.
Yeah, the only reason why I wanted to bring it up is because now we have confirmation that that was real. Mm-hmm. That's now it's final confirmation that Etheria was real.
Etheria sucked.
Yeah. So
not as much as Nakara.
I liked Nakara better than Etheria.
Nakara makes more sense for now, the story. Yeah.
Nakara was also the
it's the butthole episode,
reveal, right?
Yeah.
The episode, right, the one with the butthole.
Let's get to this last.
Yeah. At first, I openly made fun of this U2 song, but I love it now. Like it's on my playlist now that I've watched the episode 18 times since last night. But because U2 always just reminds me of that fucking album they put on everyone's iTunes without permission. No consent. But this is actually a really good song. And I read that Jason, it was like one of his favorite, besides Bruce Springsteen. He said it's his favorite non-Bruce Springsteen song. But everyone's just a bunch of Groots now. Clark is ripping through Sanctum at first, and Picasso just saved my soul at this point.
Hey,
what a good boy.
Who called it out?
That
girl.
Was perfection.
She's standing on the steps and just calling for anybody, right?
Yeah.
And it's Picasso that answers the call.
No, it's really funny that the first person she calls two is Murphy, because there's a total chance that he didn't transcend. Like, I don't know. In
that
some
you
way.
Laughed at that because I thought the same thing.
We literally all said Picasso out loud, and I do want to bring up that we asked Jason if Picasso made it to the end.
He lied.
He did not answer. He said he can't answer, remember?
He said that would be funny, I think.
Yeah, well, he said, I'm not answering that, but then he said, wouldn't it be funny if dogs don't transcend? That is mean. That they don't transcend.
Species, baby.
Picasso. Species, Picasso should take the test then. She'd be fine.
She's a good girl.
She's taken the test for the entire species, which is just her.
Just her,
She's like, I'm good, I promise.
Yeah. Picasso, ten days ago, you were not a good girl. Can you explain that?
Woof, woof. Luke, can you explain? Luke, can you explain? This might have just went over my head. Why would it be reasonable? Why would Clark specifically call for Murphy? Why would that have been reasonable that he's still alive?
It's not really.
He's the worst.
But it's also, I mean, one thing for sure, she knew that Murphy and Amori, she calls out to those two specifically.
Yeah.
She knew that they were on Sanctum. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, being someone that has no idea what transcendence really is, you could assume that maybe the other planets aren't affected. Yeah. You don't know. And she goes back, and people like to say because Murphy was someone that wouldn't make it into heaven.
If it's like a judgment thing.
It's just a joke
thing.
It's not real.
That's what I thought you were going for. Yeah, that is funny.
So Clark luckily has someone, so she won't be the only person left in the universe alone.
Where are we gonna live,
buddy? She has Picasso, and she takes the helmet, goes right back to Earth where it all started. And I love this quick little quote that I'm about to say when she just says, today, water and shelter. Tomorrow, food. Because it is just the definition of Clark Griffin. Yep. Mm-hmm. She is always just thinking survival. This is exactly what happened in after the season 5 Prime Fire goes through. Clark realizes she somehow survived. She just instantly starts thinking, how do I survive?
Yep.
She's great.
Picasso then jets to the water and she's chasing after. And this is a really sad moment. This music's playing and Clark saying, please come back. I don't want to be alone. Woo, gut-wrenching moment. And then enter Flexa.
Yeah, let me pause you before enter Flexa. If that was the end, would you be okay with it?
No, fuck that.
No, listen. Flexa comes and explains that everyone can transcend, but you can't because you bear it.
No, fuck that. I would have been pissed.
Okay.
Just Clark, exactly what Raven said. Clark says it right in the scene. She says, I get it. I bear it, so you don't have to again. I mean, I love that line for Clark. She has said it 10 times in the series. She's given up everything. And even though this season she really is kind of cray-cray, the rest, it's all leading up to that. Like, she's had to do so many bad things, but not, she doesn't want to. Up until this season, she wasn't doing it out of selfishness. She was doing it out of selflessness. This was the first season that she was doing stuff out of self, maybe a little bit of five too.
But. I would just definitely love five. To be her clan, like to be one of Clark's people in this universe, because she is just, she does some evil shit, but everything she does, she just sacrifices anything and everything in her life. She's just amazing. She puts all this weight on her shoulders, and that's what she tells Flexa. And then Flexa says back to her that I cannot take you through transcendence. Your actions have to have consequences. You're the first person across all of time to ever murder someone in the test room.
That's our girl.
You're the only test subject from any species anywhere in the universe. It's the exact line. That's psychotic.
It's so cool.
It's the coolest.
And then what's her response?
I would do it again.
Yep.
Hey, let's go.
But I do like this one line that Flexa says. She says, such a curious species. You've added so much to us already. Like, she said something like, I was glad I was wrong about you guys. Wow, they entered the consciouscent and the people that were already transcendent were like, we like these humans. These humans are cool. Yeah, they're doing cool stuff.
Humanity does have something to offer.
So this is where you get all the Maddie information. So she says, Flexa says, Maddie knew you'd say that. And then she says, yeah. She's there in a way. Her consciousness is there. She'll never feel pain, et cetera, et cetera. And she knew that living here without anyone her own age to love is something you wouldn't have wanted for her, even if that meant you have to be alone. I suppose that choice was made easier with the realization that you wouldn't be.
But wait, I think it's that just came to light right now. That's why they had to waste that dumb scene with her, Maddie, fighting the transcendence, because she wasn't going to get another scene with Clark.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So now I'm thinking about it.
That's what I was trying to get at. Whatever. Yeah.
Clark says, transcendence is a choice. You can choose to come back. And then Lexa says, until now, no one had. Squad! Squad, 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 squad!
You hear Raven's laughter. Oh my god, your heart just lifts.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the note that I have was. Squad, let's go. Oh my god, my heart feels so light.
Truly, like, I never expected it.
Having such a physical reaction to a television show, it was unbelievable the way that I felt across my whole body when they're all just like making shelter and shit together.
There's no offspring, which is kind of a bummer. And they won't join us when they die.
Right.
And then I love Alexa, but none of them seem to care, because that's when the lightness happens, that the none of us seem to care because Clark starts running. Murphy says, there she is. Ah! My heart.
Now, I just want to bring this up, and it's not a big deal at all, but I saw on Twitter, you know, Levitt, Amori, Echo, they're all like injured and dying, and they come back and they're alive, but Raven still has her limp.
Yeah,
come on, let her walk normally, man.
Maybe you have a choice of healing all your injuries. Like Amori wouldn't have healed her hand, and then Raven probably, because she doesn't see it as a handicap, she sees it as part of her person. So if she had a choice, she would have said no.
There are 14 people left in the human race, and they are as follows: Murphy and Amori, Hope and Jordan, Octavia Levitt, Jackson Miller, Clark, Raven, Nyla, Gaia, Echo, and Indra. Savage. And heavy on the girls, light on the boys. Yeah, I was
going to say, the ratio is totally favorable.
Yeah. And it's definitely worth bringing up, because the name of the show is The 100. And of The 100 that start out in season one, 4 make it through the entire season series. We get Clark, Murphy, Miller, and Octavia are the only 4 of the 100 that are there.
Yeah.
Jackson Raven are season 1. Yeah.
Jackson
and
Raven are not part of the 100.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yep.
We're good.
It's insane. 4% survival rate.
Now,
these motherfuckers.
Question I wanted to ask you guys. Trust me, I'm fine with this, but I was wondering if you think it definitely makes sense for Amori and Murphy to choose to come back.
By the end of it, yes. Okay. I haven't really thought about it. I'm just glad they're there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any problems with it. I just wanted to know what you guys thought.
Yeah, I didn't have a negative thought about it until you just brought it up. So yeah,
they weren't going to not be there. Mm-hmm. They're bench crew.
Like I said, I really loved walking back, it being Clark, Raven, and Murphy arm in arm. Those are the 3. Talk about big 3. That's it.
And we didn't even mention, as that's going on, and the laughter's all, you know, it's happening. They're all happy. They're all together. The camera starts panning up, and we get a quick little background flash of Clark in episode 1, just drawing in her room, talking about her dream of making it to the Earth's surface. And this, of course, opens up the floodgates for random ass theories, saying that this whole thing could have been, the entire story could be in Clark's mind. It never actually happened. I don't know. You know, there's always going to be those.
I just think it's just a fan service.
Yeah. 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 Of course. It's full circle.
The feels.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great.
I mean, as many gripes as we may have had, that ending, you can't help but just sit in it and just be like, yes.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it.
I actually was thinking of talking with you guys about other ending theories, but I don't think it's even needed at this point.
We'll do that on the May We Meet Again episode.
The one thing I did want to ask, though, is I saw online again on Twitter, what would you prefer, this ending or season 5 being the ending?
This one. I wouldn't give up these 2 seasons for anything. I thought Sanctum was incredible. And season 7, Bardo stuff gave me fucking life. It was so smartly written, and all the time dilation stuff, and we wouldn't have had this podcast.
No Hope, no Levitt, no Russell, no Josephine, none of that.
We wouldn't have
happened.
Known anything that happened on the ring with Raven and Bellamy and all that. We would have just been left with Clark and Maddie. Or no, end of season.
Better with Monty and
It's when they arrive outside of Sanctum's moon.
Yes.
And
okay.
It says end of book 1. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm thinking Maddie and Clark is the end of season 4.
That's prime
it's
five.
Calling. Okay. 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 Okay.
I don't know if I'm in the minority, but I loved season 6 and 7, but there were a lot of cons. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of pros. I loved a lot of it, but if I could have a choice, I would have said ending it there, open end it with not knowing what was on that planet. The Earth is destroyed. That's the end of really the story, because it was about the 100 going to the Earth's surface. I would have been fine with it ending. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I think it's Monday morning quarterbacking, but I just think that I would miss the fact that we don't have Hope, Levitt, Josephine, all of them. But I do think in general that season 5 ending would have been better, maybe, but I also think that we would have been very upset, because we would definitely want more.
Mm-hmm. I'm always saying I want more. I would sit and watch seasons on seasons of these characters just eating dinner at a table and barely speaking. I'm like, give me more. I'm never going to choose less, especially after having it. After having these two seasons, it's impossible to say you would want it to end in five.
I still loved it. And it's just by such a small margin, but yeah. I don't know if you're giving me the choice.
Yeah, I agree. Season six, great. Season seven, everything besides Bellamy's great. I don't really like the transcendence, the spiritual aspect of it. I think they pulled that out of their ass.
Took away from a lot of the early seasons mattering.
Yeah, really. But otherwise, yeah, I love these last two seasons. Kyle, what are you thinking?
I mean, I would agree with Luke that it's kind of on a knife's edge for me. I really like the concept of the series ending with Monty and Harper finding them a new place to live and the final message being like, do better.
Yeah.
Agreed. And, you know, all of our people are here. But at the same time, I agree with everything we got introduced to in season six and seven character wise. It's tough to give that up. Mm-hmm. So I'm all here for it. And plus, I mean, this ending with them on the beach, like I said, just made me feel so good inside that I'm good with this episode. I mean, I'm good rather with this ending as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would say season seven ending.
Okay.
I like season seven ending. And yeah, I'm just going to say the same stuff. At this point, I couldn't imagine the 100 without having Gabriel as a character at all.
Right.
Having Hope as a character at all. Dioza was in five, right?
Yeah.
Dioza coming back and being an amazing character.
Yeah, Dioza becoming...
Echo becoming an amazing
character. Dioza was an amazing character in season five, by the way. We would have gotten Jordan regardless for a scene or two.
Honestly, yeah. I think I would go as far as to say the last two seasons, the main characters may not have been as strong, but there was so much happening outside of their stories that I just loved. And yeah, season six and seven were still really good. I don't think either of them was the worst season of this show. No. I think that's still season one. So
we're going to talk about these kind of things on our next episode.
I don't know. I just want to debate one thing with you that you said. You said maybe the main characters. I thought Bellamy and Clark were excellent in season six. I mean, Clark and Josephine is truly fantastic 100%. Stuff. And Bellamy was strong in six as well. So I think six, more. I think seven, it couldn't have ended on six is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. It would have had to be either five or seven, definitely. But I like seven.
I would also say, I think the question was, what ending do you like better? And I actually like this ending better than what ending on season five would have left us with.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, again, too, it's tough because we definitely would have been, we want more, we want more, we want more. If that five, I mean, when we found out that there's more planets, we're like, this could go on for 12 seasons and we're going to love it.
You know? Yeah, that's
we
true.
We were okay with that, you know?
Well, when it said end of book one, I started thinking we might get 15 fucking seasons of the show. Yeah. If we're going to get five per book.
All right, hit the Bang Kill Mary, Luke, because you came up with it. It's a good one.
All right. So for our last and final Bang Kill Mary, we're going to do something a little special here. We're going to expand the options from three choices to every human that's alive on Earth at the end. But the caveat is, so you're going to have to bang,
kill one, marry one.
You're doing one of each, but it's a hypothetical scenario. If you were dropped into the situation and you refuse transcendence and you have to live with the consequences of, like, if you bang, you know,
Amori,
you better be killing Murphy or you're dead.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool, actually.
So I want you, if you need the names, here are our choices again. We have Clark, Raven, Murphy and Amori, Jordan and Hope, Nyla, Miller and Jackson, Gaia, Indra, Levitt, Octavia, and Echo.
So you're telling me I'm going to have to live with the consequences of killing one of them.
Yeah, that one's the toughest one.
That's
but
tough, dude.
I can go. I could start. I'm going to kill Nyla, which I think might be the choice that everyone may pick because it seems like the least consequences. I love you, Nyla, so much, but this is a fucking squad. If you think of killing any of these people and you're going to get murdered right back. I am going to bang Murphy.
Whoa.
Oh, man, Amori's going to kick
your
ass.
I know, but we just won't tell anybody. It's sneaky bangs. But I bang him first, and then after that, I marry Clark. Because Clark's not, I'm not cheating on Clark with.
Okay,
with
so you want to make sure that.
Yes, right. Just state that. I kill Nyla right away. It's because when I got transcended down, I landed on her, and that's how she died.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It wasn't my fault.
Oh, that's great.
You're killing the competition for marrying Clark, too.
So say the final choice again. You're killing Nyla.
I'm killing Nyla, banging Murphy, marrying Clark, and I just want to say that Clia is canon now. because we kind of been preaching Clay that. Clay is canon. Anyway, but
I can go second because I know you guys have had the least amount of time to think about this.
Okay.
So I am also going to marry Clark, and my reasoning being, I said this, I think, pre-podcast, and I also said it, I think, a little bit earlier. If you're her person, I would feel the safest ever.
Yeah.
And also, Clark is beautiful. I love her. I think she's a badass. I would love to marry Clark. She's the answer.
Okay.
I'm banging Raven because she was a smidge under Clark for marrying because she's also amazing. And I'm killing Echo because there's not a lot of good options here. Nyla's a good answer, but I don't know. Echo, I feel like, causes drama. She's moody all the time.
I'm Hope would be Echo. Kicking your ass, baby. You get beat up by Hope, you kill Echo.
So
that's my answer.
All right, I'll go. I'm going to...
I'm giddy. I love this.
I'm going to marry Raven. So Raven's my girl. There's no consequences. No one would be pissed at me for that. I'm going to bang Clark. So I'm going to just do the reverse of you, Luke. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, her and Nyla haven't really been a thing. Clia, that, you know, I like that. But, you know, I don't think it'll be a big deal. I'm just going to do it on the down low, like you said, Kathleen. And I'm actually, the reason why I'm going to bang Clark and know that it won't be an issue is because I'm going to be training with Gaia. We're going to be training hard. Like, we're going to be going back and forth. And all of a sudden, we're just going to go boom, boom, boom. And then I accidentally slice her.
Get a hit in on
Gaia.
It
wasn't on purpose. We're training hard. And I kill her.
Say it one more fucking time.
Hard.
Gaia.
Everyone, please forgive him. They were training hard.
Gaia, we're training hard. And I kill you. I'm sorry.
That's some Echo level apology right there. I wasn't myself.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, what do you got?
So I'm going to follow in my boy Jimmy's footsteps and definitely marry Raven. Octavia is my OG girl, but she has Levitt, and I don't want to stand in Jason's way of his love because we're talking consequences here, which is a big part of this season. I am going to bang Indra, sneaky bang Indra in the woods.
Get out. That's an amazing answer.
Because Indra deserves some love.
You lay it down good on her?
Bro.
Kaya's all about the pillow talk, and Indra definitely has good pillow talk.
We'll sneaky bang in the woods while she's training me to kill Echo.
Okay.
Wow. Oh, we're both killing Echo. We'll tag team her.
I loved Echo.
Honestly, I was really debating killing Picasso.
No, my God.
Get out of here, man.
You're killing Picasso because he's in his old age and you have to put him down because he's getting stabbed.
Because it's a dog and I didn't want to kill a person and then create the whole conflict of, I killed Echo, now Hope wants to kill me, or I killed Jordan and now Hope wants to kill me, or I kill Octavia, you know what I mean?
Come up with a situation of why you killed Echo. Like, I now need the background on how you killed Echo.
Jimmy was training hard.
Yeah.
Indra is training. Indra is training me and Levitt because Levitt wants to spar with Octavia in their spare time, you know, because he wants to show her that he can fuck around too. And in this time, Levitt starts describing the whole process of Echo going crazy. And I'm thinking, whoa, we can't trust this chick. Like, honestly, you guys love her and you guys have been with her, but I guess I happen to be the one to make this difficult choice. You get her the fuck out of here. I'll pull that Clark shit. I'll fucking bear it on my soul to get Echo out of here. And there you go. And then me and Indra, you know, start talking tactics. We get into it. She's like, I don't know about this.
And then
like,
you end up banging again.
Yeah, then I touch her face real gently, and she's like, wow, yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah, good, Kyle.
All right, take us home, B-Toms.
Okay, so my bang is going to be Clark. She's protagonist. She's the head honcho. I'd throw her a bang. Raven.
She'd throw you a bang.
You should be so lucky.
Yeah, bro. Why are you just tossing them aside like that? It's not important to you.
I mean, like, Clark's Clark, man. And that didn't answer your question, but
it didn't at all.
We're moving on to the second. Mary, who's going to be Raven, obviously. Yeah.
Damn, we should have taken out Clark and Raven. It's so obvious.
She's so unbelievably smart and just... She's Raven. We love her. Moral compass, all that. Although now that they're safe, probably everyone has a fine moral compass.
Yeah, true. I'm surprised nobody's bang or married Octavia. That's insane to me.
Well, I don't want to mess with Levitt, dude.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the Levitt's
the
part.
Raven and Clark don't have any strings attached.
Yeah. See, say who you're killing first.
I'm killing Indra, and this is because I'm not doing any of this slippy bullshit training accident. I would be like, Indra, think about when Indra met everybody else in season one or two. She was an adult, older, significantly older than everybody else. They were kids and she was an adult. She is just age group. She is older than them.
She'll die first anyway. Yeah.
She's going to die first anyway. And also, I think she is the most... She would want to die in this scenario if some random ass kid came dropping down from the sky. I have to bang, marry, and kill one of you, or else. She would eat that bullet.
Yep.
For the same reasons I'm saying, she is kind of the oldest. And she just said, unfortunately, she said in this episode, nobody gets to decide the when. This is a good how. Yeah. That would probably not be a good how for her. Yeah. Some dude drops from the sky and pops
her. We were safe, but Brian came down and had to bang kill Mary, one of us.
Like, she would eat that bullet for any of the people there, and it would have the added logic of she's kind of older than them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Brian comes down. He's a phenomenal warrior. He's trained hard in his years. So he comes down. He says, I'm banging you. I'm killing Gaia. And Indra says, no, not doing it. I'm staying in between that.
Yeah.
That would have been a good way to end up killing Indra. You fake trying to go for Gaia, but you know she'll sacrifice herself.
It's all the long con from Brian. All right. So that's the episode. And that's not technically all of our thoughts. So we're going to come back and do another bonus episode, basically where we shoot the shit, we talk about other theories, things we would have liked, things we liked again about the entire series. We'll do a little trivia, maybe. We'll make it fun. It'll be cool.
We are not going to be continuing to cover the 100 because it's over, guys. That's it. There might be a prequel. We would love to cover it. If there is, that's amazing. We're hoping for it. Fingers crossed. But may I just say that this is the show that brought Bingetown TV together and the first show that we covered live week to week. So it's always going to hold a special place in our hearts, I think. And that's awesome. And I just want to thank everybody that's listening now. Like, you guys made this amazing for us covering the 100. The support is so appreciated. We got some irons in the fire over here at Bingetown TV, so keep an eye out because we're going to have some awesome content coming out over the next months, including our ongoing coverage of Amazon's The Boys and Netflix's Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor is coming out soon, hashtag spooky season. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening. May we
love you guys.
Yeah.
May
we meet again.
May we meet again.
You can't play. Stay or die.